I would trade him if I could.
I don't think many people liked it, to be honest. I don't care.
Last year didn't really do well for anybody.
We should probably delete all of this.
By the laws of the podcast gods, we owe an answer.
Reporting the Highline with Rabbi in Red. Talking the rapids and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car or in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the Highline.
Hello, social distancing Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red, brought to you by Roughneck Scarves and Icarus FC. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Wednesday, March 18th, 2020, the seventh day of the scheduled 30, so far, days upon which MLS has their suspension of play, and the first full calendar week of no soccer outside of the Russian Premier League and the Peruvian Jail Third Division. I have organized my sock drawer by color, material, and length, and am going insane as I refresh bored athlete Twitter with haste. Here now to provide a respite to my, and hopefully your, idiosyncratic doldrums, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
My goodness, organize your sock drawer. We need to send you my children so that you can be occupied and busy every moment of the day. We played soccer today. We made tortillas. We visited the neighbors and kept 6 feet of distance. We made multiple meals this morning. I did three Zoom calls, one morning prayer, one a class I taught, and another class. My kids, my son is recording a podcast, Matt. This is true.
Oh my goodness!
It's called Minecraft News.
Oh my goodness. He came up with
his own theme song. The theme song is Minecraft News. Minecraft News. He just says that over and over again, and then he creates fake news about the game Minecraft. Like he pretends like there's like a story and a narrative. And I record it on my phone, and then I email it. Then I email it to the parents of his friends, who are all under equal quarantine, and some of whom are on full. Like I have a couple. We have a couple friends who basically decided their families are on full lockdown, like no social interaction outside with anybody. So like some of them have, like a bunch of them have emailed back and been like, "This is amazing, way to go!" And I'm like, "Wow." My kid learned podcasting from me. I learned it by watching you, Dad. Like it's. I'm kind of embarrassed.
Is the podcast art, Mark, like all like lime green, and it says Minecraft News in a weird font? Is that it?
I mean, it would if we had an art department. But you remember that I created the original logo for Holding the High Line,
of which we will not speak nor release publicly.
You know, sometimes. Sometimes because of the way our podcatchers work, and I think also if you want to see it, you can go to my Patreon page because it's still there. But yeah, there's some places in which it hasn't gone away. So, but yes, no, I'm bad at graphics and I'm not doing it. I could make him do it. He writes a script. He's like you, Matt. He writes a whole script out. He has a sponsor. It's really funny.
Oh my goodness. This is so great. Oh my goodness.
It's, I don't know if it's great or if it's awful, but it's
terrible,
a little bit of both.
But all podcasts are terrible that aren't done by like NPR, WNYC, or Joe Rogan.
It's terrible in a different, that's another matter.
So, Mark, I am social distancing. I am not full on self quarantining, but basically I've got some stuff for work where I'm doing some field sites where I meet up with a coworker and then we're in a company vehicle and then not exiting the car much. And then we're going to a client site where there aren't a whole lot of people and a lot of interaction or chance for exposure. So as long as the two of us are feeling okay and not showing symptoms, or any case, I'm okay. But other than that, I'm basically going to the gym, which is in my building, which now has not a quarantine, but a limit on the number of people that can be in there. And I've made two grocery store runs, and that's pretty much it since last Thursday when we podcasted. And right now I'm okay to where I probably don't need to go to the King Supers again until Saturday. You are a Rabmi. I would say Judaism is very, very good, if not full on, has on lock the dealing with suffering, rationalizing sort of your own issues that you go on a micro level, and then some of the macro effects that have occurred to the Jewish people throughout history, some of that being outside their control, some of that being derogatory or prejudice against them. Can you, as a religious leader, give us anything to sort of, from a meditative standpoint or a time for reflection, given that people are cooped up in their houses, maybe have a lot of free time or are having their marriage, relationships tested really hard? Can you give any insight onto how people should go about experiencing or thinking about that or using this time wisely?
Whoa. Good question. I mean, it's a lot. It's a whole lot. I mean, the Jewish community is working really hard to try and figure out how to support and sustain each other without being in actual physical proximity. You guys all probably know, I mean, a crazy amount of the news reports that are coming out about, you know, transmission and infection happen in churches. Here in Allegheny County, a local church, the pastor got it, a staff member got it, and two parishioners got it, probably from some service, like Wednesday service last week. And so those kinds of transmissions are really common. So, in the religious world, we've all kind of gone to meeting virtually, but, you know, religion is all about community and creating community. And so we're all trying to figure out, a lot of rabbis have given the sermon at some point, you know, social media and your phone and the internet is ruining America because we're all meeting online and we're not meeting in person. And now we're forced to meet online and we cannot meet in person. And the tune has changed dramatically in that we're using it as a tool. So that's thing one. Thing two is we're all trying to maintain social relationships. I sent a note out to my congregation that I would be calling them and that they should be calling each other for the next couple weeks because it's really important to for people to maintain community and connection, even if they can't meet individually. And then I think the theology piece, which is really important. A lot of people are kind of like, people shift into a really simplistic theology around this kind of thing, which is basically, this is a punishment from on high for something that we did. And most religious people don't think that way because it doesn't work. You know, if you have a theology that every bad thing that happens is a punishment from God, and you can't account for drug barons who drive Ferraris and have smoking hot wives and seem to live, you know, beyond the law all the time, who are unbelievably terrible human beings, and why, you know, 9-year-old boys die of cancer. Like, you can't square it. So you have to have a different theology, which is, I mean, you don't have to. Anyone can have any theology they want. My theology is basically God created a universe with rules. Those rules include lots of crazy medical things that can happen, including mutating viruses that can spread around the world really, really quickly. So it's not a punishment. It's not anything. It's just a reality of a complicated universe, which means that science has an important place in the universe. And I think one of the other things that's going on in religious communities, you may have seen this. Some people have seen this. There's a massive outbreak in two Jewish communities in New York City. Yes. Or in the New York area. One is New Rochelle, which is a suburb to the north, and one is Borough Park, Brooklyn, where a large number of ultra-Orthodox Jews were not advised by their religious leaders of how dangerous this thing was, and they kind of poo-pooed it. And the last count was 100 had been diagnosed, and 10 were on ventilators, from what I have been told. And that's a low number, and estimates are going to go up because a lot of those people didn't even follow the basic social isolation rules. I saw a video tonight of an ultra-Orthodox wedding where all they did was move it outside, but everybody was still standing right next to each other. It's terrifying. These people are making terrible choices. And, you know, it's one of those moments where religious leadership needs to step up and do a rational thing. It's interesting that you asked that, Matt, since I was not prepared to talk about coronavirus because I was fervently preparing for the next segment that we're going to do, which required a lot of prep. And I'm super excited about it because it gets me out of my head and out of all this really bad stuff that I think we can wallow in with the news. And that's the last thing I'll say, which is that if you are just turning on the news in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening, and before you go to bed, I don't know how you sleep at night. Like, there's so much bad news, and there's so much uncertainty, and so much of it is scary, that it is really no fun to be plugged in all the time. You've got to unplug, and you've got to go offline, and you've got to just, you know, kind of hunker down and hope that either this thing passes you by, or if you get sick, that you're going to ride it out and have like a low grade flu type symptom situation. Cause otherwise you could be paralyzed with fear, which I don't think is a good way of operating in life. You know, there's no certainty here, and it's easier to kind of do a soccer podcast than talk about the theology of why bad things happen to good people.
Retweet on that front, brother. There is one thing that I kind of want to address. I've listened to a bunch of other podcasts that, you know, at least have to somewhat address this at this point. And one of my Fulham ones, one of my Fulham podcasts that I listened to had a really good point, from one of the co-hosts, which is social distancing does not mean social isolation. So it's almost ironic now, Mark, that you were saying that some of your colleagues say that, you know, and a lot of people say that social media is the main of existence, but that's kind of under the premise that, oh, we should be having individual interactions person to person or with our own tribe, that depending on the psychology paper you read is anywhere from like 50 to 200 people. And that's why like the sizes of our villages pre-agricultural revolution were about those sizes. But I think we, like, social media now is even more important, especially if you're someone like me who's living in a one-bedroom apartment all by myself, to not just use social media as, you know, viewing the highlight reel and allowing that to color your cognitive distortion in the world, but to actually have interactions with people. I've scheduled to make sure I'm sending either a Facebook message or a text message to somebody I haven't been in touch with in recent times each day this week. And actually, it's kind of fitting that my news resolution is actually to reconnect with a lot of people. So I've scheduled, you know, for the weekend, a couple phone calls, a couple Skype calls with friends from high school, you know, who I see at Thanksgiving, and I see sometime around the holidays when I'm home, and then maybe, you know, one or both of us calls the other on their respective birthday. But now I'm using that time to reconnect with people who I've seen immediately. So just because you're not physically interacting with your tribe because you're cooped up in your house, or you're not able to visit as much, or you're working remotely or anything, that doesn't mean that you should be totally isolated. And definitely we here as a podcast, as a platform for the Rapids community, want to make a big deal of providing that platform so that people can interact. And if nothing else, listeners, we are a respite to you, you know, I don't know, counting the dots of popcorn on your ceiling after you finish up with your working remotely at the end of the week. But I think there's one more thing that I do want to address. We'll keep this one brief, Mark, because even though we want to move away from and think about something other than coronavirus, this is, you know, certainly something that is affecting every aspect of our life, and certainly we can look at that from a soccer context. So we talked about this briefly. Certainly there's been a lot of chatter in the last week since once we podcasted what the Premier League and what Champions League are going to do as far as when they're resuming play. Obviously, we found out yesterday or maybe 2 days ago that the Euros are being moved back to 2021. Wayne Rooney came out with a couple of media availabilities where he basically said we should finish up this season and then move to a winter schedule in preparation for the 2022 World Cup. In hindsight, a World Cup off schedule and a rescheduled Euros that's taking place in 17 different countries are probably the two worst things that FIFA could have decided in hindsight given current events. But in any case, Mark, right now we know that MLS is going to be halted at least through April 11th, the earliest right now that MLS teams could resume any form of organized activities would be, I think, the 20th of March. But right now, that looks like that's not going to happen. And even some governmental bodies and such have suggested that we shouldn't even be having gatherings of more than 25, which is about the most you can have just for an average first team practice, you know, for another 2 months. So that pushes we'll get back up in May, start in June, to maybe getting back up in June and then starting in July. There's some fitness literature out there that suggests for every single day of isolation and players not going through their normal regime, they need 1 day of training time in order, in a team environment, in order to get back up to full fitness. So you're talking about teams that played two games Rapid's certainly not hashtag strength at altitude. So if you're quarantined for a month, you need a month of just training 6 days a week just to get back to that level. So I think previously it was, let's take a 2 week respite. Everybody stay home. We'll figure things out and get started. And May Mark is looking more like June, possibly July or potentially later. And even some of the most extreme suggestions have said that coronavirus is going to be something that we're not going to be able to figure out until we actually have a vaccine that's being manufactured on a large scale. That's 12 to 18 months away. So with that, Matt Cleveland sent us an email asking about how MLS will start to deal with that. I suggested last week if the MLS had to shorten the schedule that they should just go to conference only play and completely rewrite the schedule as is. Matt was suggesting that even we potentially do away with the playoffs mark and then thus the supporters shield champion also gets, or maybe instead of awarding the shield, gets an MLS cup. Obviously, we bantied about what's going to happen to the Open Cup as the second longest tenured annual competition of the world behind the Irish Cup, which goes back to 1881. Mark, your general thoughts on the timelines for MLS resuming play, and if it becomes super inconvenient, how the heck do Don Garber and the Board of Governors and the owners and the GMs go about making decisions that certainly, if we look at it from a Premier League and a European side, are impossible to make, and no matter what they do, somebody's getting screwed?
Well, I think a lot of it is really similar to our current political situation. A lot of people with the economics of the coronavirus and trying to keep the market and the U.S. economy from completely bottoming out are throwing out all sorts of wild scenarios for how to keep the economy floating. Almost all of them are some form of an iteration of a thing that they secretly want anyways. So like Bernie Sanders is talking about student loan forgiveness, which he was already talking about before we were in an economic crisis. Other folks are talking about supply side economics where they're thinking about bailing out the airline industry and bailing out the banks, which those folks were already big fans of supply side economics to begin with. So I say all this not because I want to get political here, not at all, but more because I think a lot of people will throw out the suggestion that they already like the most, right? So if you're like, I think you and I, who like the European models of how they compete, and are not entirely sure how we feel about MLS Cup versus Supporter Shield, I think for me, I won't speak for you, but I would be inclined to say the Rapids, MLS should drop the playoffs altogether this year and play maybe June through, you know, October, with just Western Conference teams playing each other, just Eastern Conference teams playing each other. The top of the table on either side then face each other for a one match or maybe even a two match home and away MLS Cup. I mean, the cool thing about the stoppage for MLS and coronavirus is that they can legitimately experiment with and or completely change everything. And try it and just say, this is a thing that we can try. So that'd be the way that I would do it. I would just say, you know, I would do it the way, baseball used to do it before interleague play, essentially, and really going way back before, you know, there was an East and a West and they played each other, which was the best team in the National League and the best team in the American League met in the World Series. And that's how it goes. Matt, what are your thoughts? Is there a way that you would do it? Or even if you would do it my way, what are some other ways that you could conceive of the league trying to solve this, assuming that we get back on the rails in either June or July?
Yeah, so I think one thing that I think you have to start simplifying the schedule. You know, I think it was USL, was it last week, Mark's requested from the US Open Cup to not participate in that. So, I mean, if you're looking at what the Open Cup looks like right now, assuming that MLS is in, assuming that all the, like, it's basically, it's fourth tier teams, you know, Harpos and a bunch of other, the lower league teams, and then MLS. So it's effectively, you know, that first round proper of MLS teams being in, you know, I guess it would have been the scheduled, what, the fourth round this year gets moved up to what, maybe the second or third round at the absolute latest. You know, I think most MLS reserve teams, or, you know, calling up the players from the switchbacks in a Rapids context, you know, would be able to walk over most of those 10 PSL teams. And then it becomes a single game knockout tournament for, you know, for the MLS teams that survive that first round, and, you know, maybe one team out of that first round gets, rail-hawked, as they say. But, you know, I think the reality is I think the Open Cup has to die for this year. That makes me really sad. I, you know, you and I are both definite Open Cup stands, but I think the most important thing right now is the integrity of this year's play in terms of the league play. You know, you can't have a completely lost season. We've already seen, albeit of their own volition, what that did to Major League Baseball, what that did to the NHL, I think the NBA, long before even my parents met each other as well. It's devastating. You know, the NHL is still recovering from the shortened season that they had in 2012-2013 as a niche market and definitely a geographic Canadian-focused league. So certainly a league that's still growing, a league that was making such a big deal of their 25th year that's really trying to gain momentum as we go into the 2026 World Cup cycle. You can't have a lost season. I think the most important thing just is whatever, in any form, the integrity of the competition from league play has to be at the forefront. I'd say, okay, second front behind the health and human safety of the players, the fans, team executives, team employees, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I know a lot of MLS owners, probably including Kroenke Sports Entertainment, Mark, are of the kind of, we would rather take longer to resume play if it means that fans could come back and we could get the ticket and the merch and the concessions revenue. And I think that's something that's going to be a really curious situation of, you know, like, can, like how we saw with Mexico, you know, can the teams play? Can we have a couple media people there to make the TV broadcast work? And then a couple of journalists spread out throughout the, you know, the broadcast. There were probably as many technical people at field level for León. Was it León against, Pumas, I think? And then it was Club America Cruz Azul. There were probably as many people at ground level actually affecting the game of play as there were managing how the coverage of the game was occurring. Is doing that, but getting back to a month early such that the season has some form of continuity, is that more important than ensuring that the revenue and the financial implications of it actually come through? I'm one where I would say that the integrity of the league matters more in that regard. I think certainly a lot of the people in the controlling power for making that decision would say that the most important thing is that we do that, but then have the financial mechanisms in place, which would have, you know, anywhere from 11 to 15,000-ish fans being in the stadium at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. So that's an interesting thing, but I mean, just off the top of my head, I think Open Cup has to be seriously truncated, if not made null and void. I think the League's Cup, the Europa League equivalent for CONCACAF, that has to go away. I have no idea what you do at Champions League, especially because the you know, what does that look like in terms of Mexican teams having to schedule stuff and MLS teams having to schedule stuff? But I think, you know, like I said, I think the simplest version that you have is just scrapping all non-league play, everybody play interconference play, so then every game's about the playoffs, and then you truncate the playoffs in some form. I wouldn't mind your suggestion, Mark, of the, you know, just have the two conference winners play in a home and away leg through MLS Cup. I still think it has to be a little bit more competitive in terms of the number of teams. So maybe you do single game knockout with four teams from each side, so eight total playoff teams. But this is we're going to bandy about, and we can have this argument for you know, an hour every single week for the show and still not get to a good resolution. And ultimately, I think you're in a winless, Don Garber and company are in a lose only situation if and when this question comes up and has to be decided, because nothing of what they do is going to be perfect. It is going to be written in the history books about the weirdness of the season, and somebody is going to always complain about it. So in that, I am definitely taking everything that goes on henceforth with a grain of salt. With that, let's move on to something actually fun. We've talked enough about coronavirus. Listeners, we're going to try and distract you with something fun and silly that Mark and I cooked up, and in typical HTHL fashion, spent way too much time on it. Mark, you were the one who birthed this idea, so why don't you tell listeners what it is?
All right, so we are going to, Rabbi in Red, have the all-time Rapids draft, which is, Matt, this is going to be fantasy football, that actually won't ever get played, but, it'll be any player who's ever played for the Colorado Rapids, a snake draft. We're going to flip a coin. Matt, you're going to have to find a coin because I don't have one in the basement here. Nice. Nice. Is it regulation? It's regulation.
It's a nickel. So yes.
Yeah. Commissioner Don Garber is in Matt's apartment right now to flip the, to call the coin. No, it's Kevin Stott from the referees union. So we're going to snake draft this week. This week's episode of the podcast is going to be, the first six rounds of the draft. And then the next six, we're going to draft 18 players, the all time greatest Rapids. And then there's kind of like one philosophical question that I'll throw to you, Matt, and you can kind of, talk about the way you're approaching it. So there are like two approaches that anyone could come up with, which is you pick a Rapids player who had the greatest Rapids seasons. Like when he played for the Rapids, he was the best player of all time. Or another way of playing it is you take the greatest players in MLS or players who ever played, in soccer for the Rapids at any time, whether their best season was for the Rapids or not. And you kind of take their overall body of work, and consider that in order to decide their overall, contribution. So you can kind of go, or you can split it in the middle, which is probably what I'm going to do, which is like, you know, certain players had amazing careers, but with the Rapids, they didn't do much. Or certain players, other players had an amazing two seasons with the Rapids, but really kind of that was the only thing they accomplished. And so you have to kind of weigh that against their overall contribution. So that's my introduction. With that, I think, Matt, it's probably time for the coin flip on the Rapids all-time draft.
You want me to answer,
fantasy draft,
you want me to answer your question
red.
First?
Oh, yeah, that was
so I'd say it'll be a little bit of a mixed bag for me, Mark. I'm definitely, you'll kind of see how I end up doing picks, and we're just doing the first six rounds, so effectively, you know, over half of our respective starting 11s tonight, folks, and then we'll finish up the rest of the starters and then maybe have some bench players as well to do maybe a 15 or maybe an 18 man roster respectively, Mark. For next week, but I think there has to be a mixed bag. You know, even if a player was not super significant in terms of the whole of their MLS career, I don't think that we can completely throw out the nostalgia for the players who played a big role in 2010 when this team won MLS Cup, or in 2016 when this team was, you know, a game short of winning the Supporters Shield and a playoff game and a goal away from making and hosting MLS Cup, for example. And certainly I look to the 97 team that made, you know, an MLS Cup final as well. So I think there has to be some nostalgia, Mark, but I'm definitely looking at it from a mix of the standpoint of, I think longevity, as you'll see in my picks, longevity are critical. So if you were successful with the Rapids, did you do it more than a single year? And if you played your career at other teams, did you overall have success for it? I will say that I am limiting myself, Mark, and I'd throw this back to you just in terms of the integrity and the continuity between our drafts. I am going to assume we are only able to select players based on how they played for the Colorado Rapids. So for example, I could not draft Tim Howard thinking I want Tim Howard from the 2014 World Cup game against Belgium. If I am selecting Tim Howard, that is under the premise that his performance for me on all-time Rapids best 11 team red is going to be the somewhere between June 2016 and October, November of 2019, Tim Howard.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's exactly what I'm kind of getting at, which is that, you
we
know,
don't get World
it's
Cup,
somewhere in the
Valderrama by selecting Valderrama.
Well, yeah, but it's somewhere in the middle in the sense that like you get like, You get a player and you get kind of their overall aura. Like I would say like you get kind of the average of their career and their Rapids career, as opposed to say, you know, cause the other way of looking at it is like, well, think about a player who had one amazing season and then was hot garbage on a stick. Like, what do you do with that guy? Mm-hmm. We have to kind of average it out because that guy probably isn't going to make either of our best teams, because the argument is, you know, like I'm going to take, let's give an example of someone I'm not going to take. I'm tipping my hand a little bit here. I'm not going to take Axel Schoberg in my first six rounds. And the reason is, although Axel Schoberg was the third place player for Defender of the Year in 2016.
And one of only
boy,
five
was he bad.
Players to make the best 11 in the MLS best 11 history.
Nice. Well, good knowledge there. Dropping. Yeah, he was hot garbage in 2017, 2018, and 2019. And so you don't want to take that guy and then average out his 2016 season versus the other three seasons. You wind up with a mediocre player on par. Another great example of that, who may wind up getting a nod late in the late rounds, would be Skelton Gashi, who was pretty darn good in 2016, but pretty useless after that.
Very, very well said there, Mark. Okay, so I'm holding up to the camera to show Mark that this is a regulation legal U.S. nickel. I should point out, Mark, that it is actually year 1999, so a fitting year, an MLS 1.0 nickel and a pretty darn good year for American soccer overall. Shout out to the 99ers. But okay, so I think the rule is, Mark, we're going to you're not calling it. Do you want to call it in the air since I'm flipping?
I'll call it in the air.
Call it in the air. I will catch it. I will flip it, and then I will show it to you first on the camera on Skype, and then I will show it to myself. So okay, okay. 1, 2, 3.
Tails.
What is it, Mark?
It's tails.
Okay. So since we are doing
so much pressure,
since we are doing the Serpentine draft, Mark, would you like the would you like to go first or second? Under the premise that, of course, if you go first, I will get second and third, or I guess the second pick in the set in the first round, and then the first pick in the first round, and then snaking thereon after. So your choice, Mark.
I want the first.
Okay.
Pick. I want the first pick. It's hard. It's so hard. There's some teams in MLS where it's like such an obvious choice who their first pick would be. Well, not entirely, but like, so like I'm thinking
New York City FC,
you know,
Carlos Vela, and it's not even close.
Right. NYCFC, it's David Villa, and it's not even close. New England Revolution, it's Taylor Twellman, and it's not even close. Like there's a lot of those in the league. The Rapids are not one of those, so it's a little bit harder. So are we ready for my first pick? Because I know who it's going to be, but I have to sell it a little bit. So with the first pick of the first round, oh my God, he gave me a
clock.
You
are on the clock, Team Rabbi.
It's to talk about him, because I know who I'm going to pick. The first pick of the Colorado all-time draft is Pablo Mastroeni.
Of course.
And the reason, obvious, right? The reason is so many fold, I can't even begin to describe it. Number one, he is the all-time leader in games played for the Colorado Rapids with 225. He's the all-time leader in minutes played for the Colorado Rapids with 18,669. Many players in MLS haven't even played 18,000 minutes at all in their entire career, even players who had a long and robust career. His total career assists and goals are not impressive numbers. That's because the Rapids have, for most of their history, been known as a defensive grindery team. And Pablo Mastroeni was really the center of that ethos. He is on the Hall of Fame Wall of Honor at Dick's Sporting Goods Park for his incredible contributions to the team. But basically, when you think of hard man in the middle or crunching tackles or goes into a duel with utter and complete abandon, you think of Pablo Mastroeni. I mean, the guy just charged around the field looking to take the ball off you. I was going to say to murder you, but, you know, and that is actually true because he is also the all-time leader, as far as I can, as far as the math I did, in terms of yellow cards for the Colorado Rapids. I don't even think it's close, Matt. He has 56 yellow cards for the Colorado Rapids. The nearest player that I've tabulated so far has 30 by comparison. So, Mastroeni, also, I mean, even one of the most important things is that he was on the 2010 MLS Cup Championship team. He was one of the leaders of overall minutes played that season, 2,496 minutes. So his massive contribution to that ball club helped them win, MLS Cup. He's really Mr. Rapid. I know in my time, I only got to see him play his final year. I wasn't living in Colorado until then. And most of the time I knew him as a coach, as the head coach for the Colorado Rapids. I got to interview him a couple times, which was really, really cool. But you know, overall, like Pablo Mastroeni is not so much to be remembered for his coaching contribution, although he had a obviously a really good year in 2016 as head coach, but as one of the all-time greatest defensive midfielders in MLS history, let alone Colorado Rapids history. Final thing to say about him is, you know, U.S. men's team is always also an important thing to kind of bring up, that he made significant contributions to those middle years of the USMNT, a lot of the lost years that weren't particularly good, you know, 06 to 09. But that being said, like, being on the national team is still a pretty rare and uncommon thing for a Rapids player. So the first overall pick, Pablo Mastroianni. Matt, you get the second pick of the draft, and then after that, you get the third pick of the draft. So take it away, Mattathias.
Okay, no, I definitely agree with you, Mark. Pablo Mastroianni is Mr. Rapid. If there's anybody in the immediate, I would say within the next decade, pending what Sam Vines does as future captain of the Colorado Rapids and back-to-back-to-back MLS Cup champion in 2024, 25, and 26. If anybody's getting a statue at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, it's Paolo Mastroianni. I was waiting on you, Mark, because I think the second pick, given what you did for the first, is absolutely obvious, and I will be picking former Rapids center back Marcelo Balboa, an absolute stud when it came to the club game, an out-and-out starter for a very, very good club Leon team, voluntarily chose to come back to the United States to play for the Colorado Rapids, an absolute legend in his own right, a starter for the U.S. men's national team, a very good ball player out of the back, dangerous with his head and with his feet in the air offensively. Pablo, like, if I'm just looking at the number of goals in Rapids history, Mark, Marcelo Balboa is in the top 10 for the Rapids. He has 24 as a center back playing 151 games. There is no other defender that is in the top 10 whatsoever on this. This is a guy, if I were to pluck, Marcelo Balboa out of 1996, right off of him and Alexi Lalas going in there and getting, I think it was the silver medal, or it might have been the bronze in the Copa America down in Uruguay that included defeating Argentina on the way in the knockout stage games. I think Cello right now, if you were to put him on this version of the Colorado Rapids, would be one of the top five defenders in the league. I think he would be in the conversation regularly for getting called up by Greg Berhalter from the national team. And I think he would be certainly a contender for Defender of the Year in 2020 in MLS. So I'll take Marcelo Balboa. He's going to be the backbone of my defense. And I look forward to seeing him jostling with Pablo Mastroianni as Team Rabbi moves into the attacking third, Mark. And then so my second pick, or I guess the first pick that I have in the second round, I think is going to be a pretty obvious one as well. This guy was a major component of the offense. He is the all-time leading goal scorer. And I'm going back to the nostalgia, Mark. I'm also partially picking him from his contributions to the team, which includes post his playing career. And that is center forward Connor Casey. He has the most goals in Rapids history with 50. He was one of the 1-2 punches that the Rapids had with him and Omar Cummings in the 2010 team. He had success at the other MLS teams that he played for, including the Crew, including the Philadelphia Union. He's steeped from a youth level going back to his time with Dortmund under Jurgen Klopp, albeit with only one appearance that he had for BVB Dortmund. And then obviously has done a bunch of great stuff from the coaching front. So I think certainly we've picked three players so far, Mark, who I think are great players in their own right at the club level, contributed to the club in some other way since retiring. And I think you could have taken them in their current era and put them on any other team in MLS, and they would have been just as successful and just a big part of their team. I think put Connor Casey on any other team and he's a 10-goal scorer. Maybe not some of the teams in the warmer weather climates, just because he seemed really, really sweaty. But I mean, if I'm building a coaching staff, I'd love to have Connor Casey as one of my assistant coaches. And if I'm having a center forward, give me 2010 Connor Casey. And we are going to Vardy party that to his forehead and into the back of the net. With that, Mark, you are on the clock for the second pick in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, it's a steal. I mean, honestly, getting Connor Casey at three puts you in a really good position and puts the pressure on me, because there are not as many good options at striker for the Colorado Rapids. It's just a position that they've never really been able to shore up. So your question, my question then becomes like, well, what do I do now? Do I go with kind of a tactical move to shore up, to get that forward before, or do I go with like the next best pick? So, all right, I'm going to go with, I think, the two most likely next obvious picks. So my next pick for the second round, is going to be another forward, because there aren't so many great ones on the board. I'm going to go with, the Rapids' next all-time leading goal scorer, forward for the 2007 to 2012 Colorado Rapids, winner of the 2010 MLS Cup, Omar Cummings. And Cummings was a flash. I mean, he was an incredible striker for 5 years. The Rapids let him go after 2012, and basically he spent the next 4 years playing in USL, which is really interesting. And I learned that he only recently retired and finished up and now works in the academy and coaching for FC Cincinnati, which is pretty interesting. So Omar Cummings, overall, 148 games for the Rapids, scored 39 goals for the Colorado Rapids and 55 total career goals across 14,823 career minutes. His career goals per 90 minutes of 0.33 is one of the best in terms of the Rapids. The Connor Casey, who Matt just took, 0.46. So he averaged almost half a goal every game he played, or every 90 minutes he played. So Cummings a little bit off of that. Different kind of striker. He could poach, he could run, he could shoot the gaps. And Cummings was a really talented ball player. He also could dish the rock a little bit. He finished with a total career 37 assists, which is an average of 0.22 per 90 minutes, also a pretty high number. So I'm glad that I got him, second all-time leading scorer. All right, my next pick. The first pick in the third round goes to Team Rabbi. Yeah, is again going to be, I think, you know, this is a club legend type pick, which makes a lot of sense. It's also the beginning of starting to take players who can really like do a lot of different things. He's a two-way player, really kind of a box-to-box mid with a little bit of flash for finishing as well. And that is Chris Henderson. Yes. So Chris Henderson, 14,784 minutes for the Colorado Rapids. He played with the inaugural team from 96 to 98 and then went off somewhere else and then came back 2002 to 2005. So he had a long career with the Rapids. He was a solid kind of center mid who could do a lot of different things in that era, the early era of MLS, where it was a bit more raucous and higgledy-piggledy and athletics and rushing around the field was a little bit more valued than, you know, sheer technique. And Henderson was that kind of guy. He was definitely talented on the ball, but just a bulldog, a junkyard dog. 31 career goals for the Rapids, 51 career goals all time, 56 career total assists in all MLS, which gave him 0.17 goals per 90 minutes in his career and 0.19 assists per 90 minutes. Both really respectable numbers for a midfielder, kind of a guy you want to build out your team with. A guy who can also kind of do a little bit of everything. So when I'm looking at building out my team, you know, I got my unbelievable rock solid defensive midfielder. I've got my goal scoring forward, and now I've got my glue that holds it together, number eight, who can kind of run around the pitch and do things. So that's where I'm at. All right, Matt, I'm throwing to you. for the second pick of the third round and the first pick of the fourth round.
So I guess the order doesn't matter, but I will specify the order because of, I think, the significance of one of these players and really splitting hairs. And I will admit I've got a little bit of bias here for reasons that would become obvious. And that is because in the third round, second pick to Team Red, I am taking midfielder defender Jeff Laurentiewicz, who's currently playing with Atlanta United. He is one of the Iron Men, I would say, of Major League Soccer, certainly the MLS 2, MLS 3.0 era. He was obviously a massive part as the, you know, the Batman to Pablo Mascherini's Robin, especially going into that 2010 season. And everywhere that he's been, he's had success. You know, he was one of the bright spots as far as, you know, defensive stalwart on the LA Galaxy the one year that he was there as a free agent. He was kind of the only good thing that was going on for the Chicago Fire, and he was the captain in his time there. I don't know if you know this, Mark. He was actually taking PKs for the Chicago Fire at one point, and he was basically just taking
wild.
He was taking the center back approach of, I'm just going to pick a corner and then blast it as hard as I can. So no finesse, no panenkas, just like, I'm going to run up and shoot it right into the side. If the goalie gets there quicker, then so be it. I don't score. And then obviously his men, you know, one of the glue pieces for Atlanta United that ultimately led to him being on the team when they won MLS Cup a couple of years ago. And then I believe he captained the team, the night that they won either the Open Cup last year or the Champions Cup against Club America, question mark. But in any case, a guy who's had success and won everywhere he's been, he's healthy, he is an absolute Iron Man of this league. I think if he had stayed with the Colorado Rapids for the entirety of his career, you and I would be waxing poetic as much about him as a player as we might have done for Paolo Mascherini. And now that's the core of my defense, in terms of having my defensive midfielder and my center back and then my attacking striker locked up. Another position that I'm really going to care about that we were talking about off mic, Mark, is maybe the issue of this next player that I'm going to select and maybe the depth that comes after that. And I'm going to completely lock down my defense here because with the first pick in the fourth round, I am taking current defender and possibly still looking for his keys to avoid quarantine, Drew Moore. Drew Moore was a fantastic player for FC Dallas when he came into the league, obviously was a major part of the Rapids, including that 2010 MLS Cup team, and then obviously was a stalwart with the team at Toronto FC. He's started and played regularly and been unremarkable, consistent, and hardworking at every single team that he's been with. And I think if they're the alternate Rapids reality where Drew Moore and Marcelo Balboa are playing together on the 2016 team, I'm not sure that team lets in a goal at home in the entire 2016 season, Mark. So that's it for my rounds. I've got two starting center backs. I've got a defensive midfielder in the center forward. The center spine of my team is all but impenetrable.
Yeah, I mean, you basically have both of the best center backs in Rapids history. And that's a problem that I have to address, which is a little bit unsettling for me now that I look at my board. But I'm going to make a bad choice to start off. Not really. I'm going to make a great choice. It's a slightly risky choice. It's a strange choice, but you know, I'm building from the midfield. I'm really building out my midfield. And the other theory that I have to operate with is the fact that the Rapids are certainly deep at some positions and not at others. So one of the positions that Colorado has never successfully filled, with a few exceptions, or has only had in little spots, is attacking midfield. Mm-hmm. There have not been those number 10s or even like a kind of a deeper lying eight who makes things happen with good passing a whole lot. And so that's a thing that probably needs to be addressed. There are some other attacking midfield choices that one could make. There are a number of interesting attacking midfield choices that one could make if one wanted to. But I am going to do something that might seem slightly insane and or risky. And I don't care because I want this guy and that's how it is. Which is with the second pick of the fourth round, the Colorado Rapids / Rabbi team is going to select Carlos Valderrama.
All right.
And I'm gonna make my case for this. So again, like I said, there's not a lot of great choices for the Rapids as an attacking mid. There's a couple others, which I'm sure you will either get or we will get at some point. But Valderrama only played for the Rapids in his final 2 years in MLS. He opened after coming off of the 94 World Cup. He was, of course, locked down by MLS for a contract. And then, he started off. I didn't know this until I kind of looked it up, or maybe I knew it and forgot it, but Valderrama was 34 when he started in MLS, and he was 40 when he retired. And he was still one of the best players in MLS history. So again, averaging out what he did for the Rapids and what he did all time in MLS, which includes being the inaugural 1996 MLS MVP, first ever MVP in the league. With the Rapids, he played 39 games, 3,600 minutes, so not too shabby. He only had one goal for Colorado, but he had 16 overall, a career total of 0.09 goals per 90 minutes. Not great. It was not a big goal scorer, but that's not what Valderrama was. Valderrama was the greatest pocket passer, you know, really invented the regista position before anybody knew what that was. He was Pirlo before Pirlo was Pirlo. 85 career total assists in MLS. He averaged over 90 minutes, 0.49 assists per game. That is way off the charts better than anybody else on this list of any Colorado Rapids player. If you need a guy who can get the ball to your forward, it's Carlos Valderrama. And so I want that guy on my team. I don't want to leave him till the fifth or the sixth pick. I want him now. And I want him now. So, that's my fourth round pick. To start the fifth round, I think, right, yes. Matt? I gotta make a pick here at the fifth round. I think you've raided the cupboard for center backs. So I'm gonna need to start making good defensive moves. I'm not super happy with the remaining center backs on the list. I feel like a lot of them are kind of, like, well, I could take that guy or I could take that guy. They're all pretty good. So what I want to do is get the best, probably the best right back in the history of the Colorado Rapids off the board before you get him. Cause the drop off at right back is going to be precipitous. And so that means that the Rabbi is going to take with the fifth round pick, the marvelous Marvell Wynn. Marvell Wynn. If there's one reason to take him, which has nothing to do with this draft by itself, which is when you played FIFA, Marvell had like 92 speed in the like 2015 FIFA 15 edition, maybe the FIFA 14. So when you had to play online and you wanted to play, the rules said that you only had to play with the silver players. Marvell Wynn was the most expensive guy that you could buy in an auction because you had to pay 10,000 coins for Marvell Wynn because there were so few plus 90 speed guys on silver. But that aside, Marvell played 140 games for the Rapids, 12,152 minutes. He was the fastest outside back the Rapids had. He provided pretty good service from a wide position, but mostly you couldn't get past him. He was going to chase you down and he was going to win the ball. And he was just a fantastic player, to get back on. So, with the fifth pick, I've finally got someone on the defense. It's the best fullback the Rapids have had, on either side, and it's Marvell Wynn. With that, Matt, you get the second pick of the fifth, the first pick of the sixth.
Yes. So, with my, I guess the second pick of the fifth round, I will take probably the first major player to have an established long career in Europe to come to the Colorado Rapids and then have some form of prolonged success. And I'm picking him in part because I know what he's been able to do as a coach since then, and then also the player that he was for the Rapids, knowing what he was able to accomplish as a player before that. I'm also picking because, I mean, I'm amassing, you could make a legitimate argument at this point, Mark, of is my team right now a better team on the field or like a coaching staff right now? But in spirit of that, and then also having a fantastic accent is, of course, former Scottish international and former Colorado Rapid John Spencer, likely to be my underneath striker underneath Connor Casey. And then depending on, I don't know if we're actually forming like a playable formation for like our teams to play each other in like FIFA draft.
Oh, we are.
Mark, but possibly a guy who I could go out to the wing as well. This is a guy who was born in the academy at Rangers in spite him being a Catholic, with obviously the rivalry you had there between the Catholics and the Protestants, and then respectively in the religious undertones of the fan bases and the players that were necessary for the Rangers and for Rangers and Celtic respectively, as I am wearing a Celtic FC shirt to celebrate the belated St. Patrick's Day. This guy was an absolute stud when he was at Chelsea, went through a number of different clubs throughout England and Scotland before coming to the Colorado Rapids. 37 goals in 88 games played in not a super great era for the Rapids. They were about mid-table, kind of middling in terms of right on that playoff bubble line, but somebody who is still extremely effective. And then an out-and-out Scottish international for a couple of years in the middle of the 90s when he was at Chelsea as well. A great underneath striker and a great secondary scoring option. And so if the only thing John Spencer is doing on my team is cleaning up opportunities that are left from Connor Casey, getting, you know, bodied against whichever team player you select at center back, Spencer's going to be cleaning things up and he's going to have a lot of scraps to score on. So kind of, I've sort of manufactured like a Kai Kamara, Diego Rubio relationship here, Mark. So that's my pick. I am taking John Spencer, and then with the first pick in the sixth round, this will be my last pick of the episode, and I'm gonna have to be a little bit careful with this one, Mark, as far as sort of the way that you've gone about selecting players. So I'm gonna select another player that is in a position that the Rapids have not historically had a lot of success at. He was really successful and kind of had the right coaching situation. He's kind of fallen off since then, but I don't think you can name many Rapids players who came in, were a contender from the start at for Rookie of the Year, had success with the Rapids since then, and then actually were given a shot to play in Europe. And so for those reasons, I'm going to be selecting DeShorn Brown. You know, who obviously was a big part of that 2014 team. You know, he and I don't think they won it, but they were finished second and third between him and Dylan Powers for Rookie of the Year. Can you jog my memory, Mark? Okay, you're nodding, so that's about right. So in any case, this is a guy who has, similar to Marvell Wynn, blazing speed, not super great in terms of link-up play, but in being slow. But as a team, you know, we're kind of, it's ironic, Mark, that we're both building a similar team that fits out the ethos of the Colorado Rapids. And like DeShorn Brown in 2014 is what I think a lot of fans and what Robin Fraser is hoping Jonathan Lewis can become in 2020. And he's doing that at a position where there aren't a whole lot of options in terms of longevity at that left midfielder position. I'm roughly trying to play a 4-2-3-1, and so I have DeShorn Brown, and so I'm locked up. There's no distinct position where I have a whole lot of weakness right now, or a position where I wouldn't be okay with picking, you know, the secondary pick with you getting first. So with that, Mark, I'll give you the last pick of the episode, the second pick in the sixth round. You are on the clock.
Oh my God. I don't know, man. It's becoming a difficult thing. There's a lot of guys that you could go with. There's also a lot. You're really hitting on the fact that the Rapids are deep at a couple positions and really weak at a couple positions, that they really need to address. And I think that kind of idea of a lack of really talented wide players who are fast and who can bend in balls, is a serious problem that we're going to have to deal with. So that leaves me with a couple of possibilities, which is one, I could just keep building out with the best possible players and then play them out of position. Or two, I could go steal the best guy left at a position and hope that you, kind of just adjust and deal with it. So I'm going to go with that latter opinion. It's such a hard call because I'm stuck between two guys and I really want both of them right now, but I can't. I'll take the risk. I'm going to leave I'm gonna change my mind. I'm gonna go with building out at a position I do not need any more guys at, but I'm gonna do it anyways. I'm gonna wind up with 7 midfielders. That's what's gonna happen. I'm gonna play the vaunted 2-7-1 formation.
Listeners, I would like to remind you, off mic, Mark has openly said to me that there is a reality where he would be okay with playing a goalkeeper and 10 Michael Aziras and having no qualms about it whatsoever. So we are both definitely on brand right now. Mark, continue with your brand building.
You're pretty close. I mean, you're pretty close. I'm going to go with the guy that made Michael Azira Michael Azira for the Colorado Rapids, and that is Sam Cronin. So with the 6th pick with the 12th pick, 6th round for the Rapids Rabbis, we're going to go with Sam Cronin. So Sam Cronin, of course, played for the Rapids in 2015 through 2017, 62 total games, 5,319 minutes. Just 2 goals, which, by the way, is more than Michael Azira had. 8 total career goals, 21,000 total career minutes. Of course, his contributions as a passer, 14 total career assists in MLS. Not really the important thing in Sam's career. Really the important thing in Sam's career was his unbelievable ability to absolutely snuff out any attack between the lines. I mean, Sam ranged from line to line, and really created unbelievable havoc. He was either the harasser or the deep liar, and he formed in the 4-2-3-1 with Michael Azira, one of the better partnerships, in MLS history as a defensive midfielder. In 2016, a lot of people were basically saying, including Matt Doyle, that he was really the linchpin of the entire thing. The thing that made that defense amazing, you know, remember the back line. And if you look back in retrospect, you can make an even better argument for that. The 2 primary center backs that year were Jared Watts and Axel Schoberg, who went on to basically do nothing the year after that. As soon as Sam Cronin wasn't in front of them, they weren't nearly as effective. And really there was no major scoring on that team either. The 2016 Rapids was basically Sam Cronin's team. Of course, in 2017, the Rapids traded him. He had a head injury, a lot of migraines, concussion, post-concussion syndrome, and basically retired effectively at the beginning of 2018. Apparently has lived, I think, and still lives around the Colorado area. I'm not sure if that's still true, but he was in 2018 and 2019 for a while. But anyways, Sam Cronin, amazing guy, remarkable player for the Colorado Rapids, going to be the final pick of this episode. And, you know, I know that I'm just going to wind up with 11 defensive midfielders, Matt, and I don't care.
I was trying to...
Defensive midfielder FC!
Alrighty. Shall we get out of here, Mark?
Yeah, did we have any more questions, or are we all good for
we answered the one and we're good? But I mean, we're gonna have to spread out the content in order to make this work. So, you know, we had a couple others that we'll get to over the course of the next couple weeks. Certainly at least one, if nothing else, it'll be a banter topic every single week. And certainly we'll get through the rest of our starting 11s. And then Mark, did we come to an agreement? Do we want to have a bench, and are we doing a full 18 man squad for this draft?
I'm gonna go 18 because I know that I've got more in my footlocker here. I mean, Matt and I, because we are collaborative and we love each other, and it's not like our teams could ever take the field against each other, not without like a tremendous amount of airline tickets and a cooperation from KSC to fly me and Matt in to coach these 2 teams. But it's not like these 2 teams are ever actually gonna face each other. So this is just a great exercise and kind of David Roth, who formerly wrote for Deadspin, used to do a column that he just referred to. He was a huge nerdy 1980s, 1990s baseball fan. And it was just called Let's Remember Some Guys. And it was like, you know, it was the baseball player who batted 239 but had that really funny mustache and one time tripped on his way to first base. You know, like Let's Remember Some Guys. So that's what this is. The further we go into the later rounds, the more it becomes, hey, remember this guy? No? Well, he played for the Rapids. So yeah, so I think that's why we go the full 18.
All right, so yeah, I agree with you. So we'll stick it to 1 minute for next week, and then we'll do the rest of the full 18 and maybe one other Ask HTHL, because we got a couple good emails. Mark, we did not have a correct answer for our other trivia question regarding the three players who are quoted in our intro show. So if you again want,
goodness,
so people cannot get the first one at all, even though I keep dropping hints and everything. So email those or send us a DM at Rapids96Podcast or Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. The three players and the order in which they occur. The first one, the third one's pretty obvious. The first one people can figure out because of what he says, but nobody seems to realize who that first guy is, you know, talking about who he could trade. I think the fun question would be, once people figure that out, is which player is he referring to that he's saying that he wants to trade. But in any case, listeners, follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard. Check out our written musings at American Soccer Analysis and LastWordOnSoccer.com. As previously mentioned, you can get in contact with us, Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com and at Rapids96Podcast on the Twitter machine. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHDHL and we'll answer them on the air, because after we finish this draft, we got nothing better to talk about. If you believe that we bring monetary value to your lives, I would ask you to please support our sponsors, Roughneck Scarves and Icarus FC. Roughneck Scarves are an official scarf supplier of Major League Soccer, USL, and US Soccer. So get your women's national team gear to emphasize the spending of merch that then is helping the women in their fight for equal pay. You can find all of that stuff at roughneckscarves.com. And then if you're looking for an alternative kind of startup-y option for custom kits with anything you design, we guarantee it. Mantra Icarus FC is a great alternative to the old style uniforms and just the cookie cutter templates that you get from the big boys. Icarus FC will help create your kit of your dreams at an affordable price. Help them design your next kit for your club team or pub team at IcarusFC.com. You can also head on over to DenverPost.com/HTHL and Patreon.com/Rapids96Podcast if you believe that we bring monetary value to our lives. With that, listeners, continue to stay safe, socially distance, but do not socially isolate yourselves. We will see you next week to bring a respite and hopefully a little bit of soccer joy and burgundy and blue joy in your lives.
Peace and defensive midfielders.